The following program is a presentation of the Options Insider Radio Network. For more programs, visit www.theoptionsinsider.com or search for Options Insider Radio in iTunes.
Radio program that helps teach you options trading inside and out, basic to complex. This is Options Boot Camp, brought to you by SoGo Trade, an extraordinary value in online trading. Why pay more for the same trade when SoGo Trade can deliver for less? Options commissions are just $5 per ticket and 50 cents per contract, and just $3 for stock and ETF trades. Open a new account today and receive 100 free trades. Visit www.sogotrade.com to learn more about all our free trading tools, educational resources, and other resources available to you to enhance your trading experience. Remember, options involve risk and are not suitable for all investors. For more information, please read the characteristics and risks of standardized options available at www.sogotrade.com. Now, let's get you into peak options trading shape. Here are your Options Bootcamp Drill Instructors, Mark Longo, Dan Passarelli, and John Critchley.
All right, and welcome back to Options Bootcamp. And I just love that intro. It really gets me pumped to dive into the world of options and to put on my whistle and my drill instructor hat and do some training. My name is Mark Longo from the OptionsInsider.com as well as the Options Insider Radio Network. And as always at the top of the show here, I want to encourage all of our listeners to play the home game and surf on over to TheOptionsInsider.com. You can find articles and analysis about most of the topics, if not all the topics we're going to discuss on today's show today, as well as quite a few other things, breaking news on the options market, unusual activity alerts. Of course, all of the archived episodes of this and every other program and our network, and perhaps most importantly, that's where you, the listener, can chime in and sound off and join us on our mail call segment. You can just use our comment system or even shoot us an email, questions@theoptionsinsider.com. A lot of ways to play the home game and follow along here on the Options Bootcamp program. And of course, I am not alone on the Options Bootcamp Drill Instructor Squad. No, not by a long shot. I am joined by my compatriots, my comrades in arms. None other than my fellow drill instructors, starting off with the man holding down the fort over there at Market Taker Mentoring. You may know him from his various books on options Greeks. He is Dan Passarelli, the man,
hey.
The man behind MarketTakerMentoring.com. How you doing, Mr. Passarelli?
Oh, man, I am wonderful over here. Everything is just splendid and spectacular. And, man, I am ready to talk about some options today.
It's just got that feeling in the air, doesn't it? It's a good day to do some options boot camping, if you will.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
I think you're like me. That theme just gets you pumped up, and you're ready to go out there and do some options drill instructor work. And, of course, we are also joined by the major domo over there at SoGo Trade. He is John Critchley, the options specialist over there at SoGo. John, welcome back to the program, sir.
Hi, Mark. Hi, Dan. Thanks for having me back to help in some drills for our new recruits. We finally have some warm weather on the East Coast, finally, so I'm looking forward to it.
It's starting to cool off a little bit here in Chicago, but it's not bad. It was about, I'd say almost, it was 63 degrees, I think, yesterday in Chicago. So you can't complain about that. January in Chicago when it's pushing 70. There are certainly worse things. So there, with our local weather report concluded, we're going to dive right into, instead of basic training today, we're going to move on a little bit and dive into our options drills segment.
Call him, Boots. Time for our favorite pass. this time, Option Drills. We're going to take the strategies learned during the show and teach you how they can be employed to achieve a specific objective. Do you hear me?
Yes, sir!
All right, and welcome to our Options Drill segment. This is, of course, the portion of the show which we don't get to often enough because we spent so much time on our earlier episodes really focusing on the basics. But now we're going to take some of those basics we've discussed on previous episodes and apply them to different scenarios and teach you how you can apply them in very specific trading scenarios. And today we've decided to drill down, pun intended, on one very specific trading scenario, and that is earnings. Of course, very timely for a lot of our listeners. We're recording this in the middle of earnings season, but of course, we know a lot of our listeners come to our show 3 months, 6 months, 6 years, who knows, down the road from when we record these episodes. So these little nuggets, these pearls of wisdom we're going to share with you today can apply at any time when you're trading, looking at an earnings season today, tomorrow, or a couple of years down the road. And when you're looking at earnings, it's really a very basic binary scenario. In many ways, it's very similar to the rest of options trading. There are two very stark different approaches to overall options trading. But this becomes even more emblematic, I think, when you're talking about earnings, because it becomes a very divisive concept. People, for whatever reason, have their entrenched ways that they like to approach earnings. It's a schism in the options world. And we've talked about it on the show in the past. I used to walk around the floor during expiration time on the CBOE, and you could tell right off the bat who was trading one way and who was trading another way. It was very, very obvious. Of course, the two basic approaches I'm referring to when we're talking about earnings are either the long premium route or the long volatility, the long option route, or indeed the short premium, short vol, short option route. And though, like I said, people tend to really fall into one of two camps in the ways that they tend to approach earnings. And we're going to go through each of those in a little bit of detail. We're going to start with, I think, the long volatility, the long option, the long premium type approach to earnings. I think it makes a lot of intuitive sense for a lot of people, and they can wrap their heads around that when we're talking about that. Now, what do we mean by this? We mean, of course, that you're net buying options, or you're buying premium, you're buying volatility going into an earnings spread. This could be buying, let's say you're looking at XYZ, it's trading $50. You could be buying an XYZ at-the-money call. You could be buying maybe a vertical call spread where you're long the at-the-money, short the out-of-the-money. You can do a lot of different things, but you're going to be net short vol, short premium, or I'm sorry, net long vol, long premium going into these types of strategies. And so this really, when you're looking at these types of strategies, you're looking at trying to make money in a couple of different ways. You're looking at vol increasing if you're one of the more savvy traders and you're doing looking at really at a volatility type approach where you're doing some delta neutral type trading. But for a lot of our listeners, I think for this type of show, you're really going to be looking more at the directional component of this, the delta component of this. So in this case, you're really looking at buying an option, paying in many cases, going into earnings very high or inflated levels of volatility, higher inflated levels of premium, and in turn, hoping that the corresponding movement in the underlying post-earnings, or perhaps in the run-up to earnings, will offset what you paid and indeed make you some money. There's a couple of pros to this. Obviously, it's advantageous. We talk a lot on the show about time decay and how decay is a non-linear thing in many different scenarios. This is a good example of that because typically an option will decay a little bit every day, but going into earnings in the weeks leading up to an earnings announcement, you typically see that decay decrease dramatically or perhaps even be non-existent for a few days because you're seeing volatility creep up during that same time period. So it tends to offset a lot of that decay. So going into the earnings announcement, you're really going to have at least a few free days of gamma, a few free days worth of exposure to the underlying from a decay perspective. So that's definitely a pro in the camp of going the long premium, long option approach. Of course, that pro comes with some substantial cons. The flip side of that is that, of course, all that decay that has been bottled up going into the earnings announcement tends to come out right away, as soon as the announcement is made. It's kind of, I compare it to a balloon. This balloon is being filled up and filled up and filled up going into earnings with all this volatility, all this juice, all this noise going into earnings. And once the announcement happens, that balloon tends to pop. And unless there's a dramatic movement, a dramatic surprise in the earnings, all of that vol is really going to come hissing out of that balloon. And you really need a dramatic movement in the underlying to overcome that. Another downside to trading long volatility, long premium going into earnings is that quite frequently we see a lot of the movement in the underlying happening in the after hours. And you know, if you're trading options, you really don't have access to that. So you have to wait until the next day when the underlying opens to be able to close out your options positions. And quite frequently we see the move retracing or perhaps even being completely reversed in the next day. And so you don't get to participate in all the wide range of different movements and swings on the underlying that you might hope to if you're a long premium trader. That's just a quick overview of the long premium approach. I'm now going to toss it over to my fellow drill instructors here to get their takes on the long premium approach. Then we'll flip it over and go to the dark side. Maybe Dan, we'll start with you. What do you typically counsel your mentees, your clients, when they're coming to you saying, "Hey Dan, I want to go into XYZ earnings long premium"? What do you walk them through in those scenarios?
Tell them be careful. Because, well, like Mark was pointing out, and actually, I mean, we could get off on a little bit of like a philosophical tangent here.
By all means, tangent away, sir.
Mark was saying how, you know, you basically get a few days of free time decay and then it all kind of gets sucked out, and which is really, you know, it's totally true, you know, although you can kind of look at it the other way and just say, well, you know, you're suffering that time decay, but implied volatility is rising, which is kind of what you do with the model. I mean, it's basically the same thing, 6-1, half dozen of the other. And that's the thing that you have to watch out for. When you look at it the way I just described, which, again, is exactly the same thing in terms of option premium, just a different way of looking at it from a modeling standpoint, you really have to pay super close attention to implied volatility. I think we're going to talk a lot more about that throughout the show. Right, Mark?
That's the plan, Stan.
Yeah, so that's really the one thing, not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but watch that implied volatility.
And John, I know you obviously work with a lot of clients over there. You've actually surprised me in the past by saying a lot of your clients over there at SOGO tend to lean towards the light side, the buying premium side of the fence. So you have this conversation quite a bit. What do you typically counsel your clients when they're calling up asking questions about trading options from the light side, or trading earnings, I should say, from the light side?
Well, just for disclosure, that is my favorite way to play events from the long side. It's my comfort zone. And, you know, there are a few different ways that I advise clients to look at the earnings. The first way is if you're doing the weeklies and you look at the at-the-money straddle, which is buying the calls, buying the puts, you need to look at the not the implied volatility of the weekly straddle, but how much premium you're paying. For example, if there's a $100 underlying, the strike straddle is trading at $8, you need an 8% move up or down to break even. So when you're looking at straddles for the weeklies, for the earnings, you need to look at the straddle in terms of the percentage of the underlying at the straddle cost. Now, what I also advise sometimes, if the premium of buying the straddle is too exorbitant, then look at maybe a strangle. And for example, I wrote a little article about strangle in Apple. Now, in hindsight, the straddle would have been actually better, but the premium was, I think, $35 for the straddle, and the strangle was a $475, $550 strangle, and that was, I think, $10. That actually went to $30. So it's whatever's in your comfort zone. Just be forewarned, like Dan and Mark mentioned, that if the underlying does not move, you have a potential to lose a large portion of the premium that you paid. So just be careful and just be aware of that. Now, okay, so one of the things that I always bring up is do your research. And all you need to do is go back in any third-party website, research.com or others, and go back maybe 4 quarters, maybe 8 quarters, and look at how much the underlying has moved after earnings. And then once you do that, you can get an average. And, for example, Netflix. The average move in Netflix was, I think, for the 4 earnings before was 16%. And the straddle was about 13.5%. It was 103. The straddle was $14. So it looked a little underpriced. And guess what happened? The stock went up 40% on earnings. And then the next day it went to 170. So in 2 days, 70%. Now, of course, that's an outlier, but be careful, that can happen. But if you did your research and you said, wait, look, 16% of the last 4 earnings, pricing at 12%, maybe there's an opportunity here. And the same thing happened in Apple. The last 3 earnings moves were about 6.7%, and the strata went out you know, a little bit less, and then look what happened after the earnings came out. So do your research, look at the past moves, look at the peers in that sector also, and that'll give you some guidance, you know, to what you want to do.
All right. John, it always surprises me. You're one of the few guys I knew who came off the trading floor and didn't get lured to the dark side of premium selling. Of course, that's where we're going to shift our focus right now, to that dark side. Of course, the short vol, short premium, short option approach to trading earnings. And I say this is very much a schism in the options market, because it's true. There are a lot of people out there who really hold that the only way to really approach earnings is short premium. And we used to see these people all the time on the trading floor. I've joked in the past about how you could walk around the exchange on earnings on the morning of expiration Friday, or during earnings announcements, any type of event like that. They would approach events in the same way. And you could tell right off the bat who was dramatically short premium and who was long premium, because usually the long premium guys were relatively unscathed and the short premium guys tended to be sweating profusely and popping Tums. And that's definitely one of the downsides of the short premium. But before we illuminate the downsides, we'll talk about some of the upsides. The pros, of course, it is in general usually a higher probability approach to the earnings event, or any type of event type trading, really. You have most of events really tend not to dramatically outperform what John was just talking about, the straddle, the at-the-money straddle. So you can look at that and get a good gauge of what the market is really pricing from an underlying movement perspective, and then gauge your probabilities off that. And usually from that sense, the market, the option traders are pretty savvy. They tend not to underprice those straddles. Once in a while, it does happen, but usually it doesn't. So people tend to lean on that as being a higher probability type of trade. Of course, we talked about time decay in the past. Time decay is in your favor in these types of trades. So all other things holding constant, that time decay will work in your favor. And you don't need, of course, a massive, substantial move in the underlying for these type of trading to pay off. Of course, the flip side of that is if there is a substantial move in the underlying post the event, post earnings, you will indeed pay through the nose. It can be a very dangerous and difficult lesson for a lot of people to learn. And if it does happen, of course, the losses can be catastrophic. Typically, also, and in talking about earnings and short premium, you're really not going to realize the value, the gains on that position until the actual event has happened. What that requires then is you have to hold this short position through the event, and that is really where the dice rolling aspect of it comes into it. We talked about going into the event, and Dan just mentioned as well, of course, the implied volatility increases. That tends to offset the time decay you would otherwise experience, so you're not really going to collect that until the event happens. So the short premium trade, you really have to hold that through the event, which is really the riskiest and most tumultuous type, our most tumultuous time of the earnings announcement, as opposed to the long premium. You could sometimes take those off prior to the event itself and have a decent return for your investment. So that, of course, makes short premium a more difficult style to trade. And of course, in general, the higher the higher level of risk overall to these trades, the potential for some catastrophic losses. We just talked about Netflix. Netflix is often referred to as the Widowmaker because it has wiped out so many short premium traders in the past. It makes this type of strategy really, shall we say, difficult on the old digestion. A lot of people have a hard time really managing this strategy over time. It can keep you up at night. So if you're one of those types of traders who tends to keep these positions in your head overnight, makes it difficult to sleep, then you probably may want to think about avoiding the short premium side of the fence. So that's just a quick overview. Dan, once again, we will toss it to you. Now let's flip the coin around, and let's say I'm one of your mentees and I'm coming to you now and saying, Dan, I really want to get hardcore short XYZ going into earnings. Short that straddle, short that strangle. What do you tell me, sir?
Good luck, baby.
That's why we pay you the big bucks. I like that.
You know, yeah, I mean, just like Mark was highlighting here, it is tough selling premium going into earnings, but, you know, it's not impossible. You know, I know that there's a lot of people out there who believe that selling options is the only way to make money trading options. And then, of course, there's other people who believe that buying options is the only way to make money trading options. And obviously, you know, you're both wrong. You know, there's not just one way to do it. And the case in point, when I talk to people, and this applies to earnings and really anything, and let's just keep it in the context of earnings here. If you're looking at a potential earnings play and you're thinking, well, should I buy options here going into earnings? and you look at it and you look back at how big the past moves were, and maybe you can use implied volatility to figure out what the likely move is going into earnings is likely to be. And you look at it and you say, should I be buying some options here, buying a straddle or buying a call? And if your answer ends up being, heck no, I don't think this is going to move enough to warrant making money by buying options, then guess what? You just found yourself a nice short option play, right? If you don't want to be a buyer, you must want to be a seller. If you don't want to be a seller, you must want to be a buyer. And that was one of the things down on the trading floor that, you know, people would say when you're not sure about a trade, they say, hey, what do you think about this trade? You go, I don't know. I don't know if I want to be a buyer or a seller. They say, okay, gun to your head. You have to be a buyer. You have to be a seller. Which one is it? And you pick, you know. So, yeah, moral to the story, being a seller going into earnings can be a little tricky. But when you look back over a year, I like to go over a two-year period using daily candles, take a look at how big the moves have been going into earnings are, and then look at how big those option premiums are. And if you think you can take in enough premium to absorb a move like you've seen in the past and still make money, I think you found yourself a nice little short.
Well said, sir. And John, I know you said you typically like to play from the light side, your Yoda to Dan and I's Darth Vader. But even though that is your preferred approach, you obviously have a lot of people coming to you also looking to trade the other side of the fence. So what do you typically caution them? What do you advise them when people are coming to you saying, I want to trade short premium going into earnings, John?
I mean, we normally advise against it, but one thing that I do say is, you know, sometimes you can use the elevated volatility to, you know, produce an income producing options play. In other words, you can see that volatility becomes so elevated that you can do a simple covered call. But I am very leery of selling options in the earnings because we see what happens to Netflixes and with the Apples. Now, traders can take those hits sometimes. But sometimes the retail customer can't. And also traders have a way where they can sell options, but then they can hedge them in ways that the retail customer can't. So they have an advantage there also. So it's very, very tricky to sell. I will leave it to the pros to sell premium, or just be ready for the Netflix or the Apple. You got to be very, very careful. You know, one more real quick thing. You know, the options don't really predict the move, but they do this thing they call the standard deviation of the move. And, you know, for Netflix, for example, there was a 15% expectation for earnings. What that really means is the market price is in a two-thirds probability that Netflix will move less than 15%, and there's a one-third chance that the stock will move beyond the implied range. So if you sell premium, more times than not, guess what? You are going to make money. But the losses that you incur in these big outlier moves might just eat up all those profits. So just pick your spots, do your research, and be careful.
And I think that's why all of us here on this show typically counsel, when we're talking about dark side short premium type trading, that you definitely do it in a risk mitigated fashion. You don't just come out and just blast out straddles and roll the dice and hope for the best. You actually have some spreads on to mitigate your overall exposure to those dramatic swings. And we'll get into some of those strategies in a second. But first, we want to finish up here on the light side, dark side, long premium, short premium, just earnings in general. We talked earlier about we talked about the Greeks many times on the show in the past. We have Dan on, of course. He's Mr. Greeks from an options perspective. But when we're talking about earnings, sometimes these numbers and these metrics tend to be a little bit, they perform a little bit differently. We've already highlighted the fact that time decay performs much differently around earnings time than it does the rest of the month, the rest of the cycle, because you're not having this general progression of decay. It's actually being bottled up and offset by implied vol. And so there's a lot of little nuances that go on with the Greeks around earnings and events like that that really are worth discussing. So as usual, when it comes to the Greeks, I'm going to toss it over to my partner in crime, Mr. Dan, the man who wrote the book on the Greeks, available on Amazon and finer bookstores everywhere. And Dan, what do you, let's do a quick overview then of the Greeks around earnings and these types of event scenarios.
All right. So I kind of started this conversation earlier, and I kind of wanted to reserve it until we got a little bit into the discussion here. So what Mark was saying about, you know, kind of skating, getting a few free days of time decay because the options hold their value and don't tend to not lose that theta. And I said, yeah, right, exactly. But you can look at it another way too, from a modeling standpoint. And here's that discussion. Really, the way I would look at it, how it actually happens is, even though the option doesn't really decay, the theta still comes out, but the implied volatility rises, making the option worth more by its vega. And therefore, any negative theta decreases in the options price is offset by positive theta increases in the options price. So it kind of basically, for all intents and purposes, it doesn't decay, but from a modeling standpoint, that's what's going on. So really what you're seeing is you're seeing implied volatility rise incrementally each day. And if you look at a volatility chart, a lot of times you'll see it kind of bumps up, you know, maybe 4 days before earnings, and then bumps up again 3 days before, bumps up again 2 days before, bumps up again 1 day before. And sometimes it can be pretty dramatic. Sometimes the vega increases can far outweigh the theta decreases, and you see the options just getting more and more expensive. The bottom line with earnings, the most important thing that any trader can do is always, always look at the implied volatility levels. And it's likely that the implied volatility is going to rise at least somewhat. Every once in a while, you look back on a stock chart and you see when earnings comes out, it doesn't do anything. You know, there's a good handful of, you know, old school conglomerates and stocks like those where when earnings comes out, a lot of times nothing happens. And you look at their implied volatility charts and you can barely even tell when earnings is because implied volatility doesn't rise. And then there's some like Google and Apple and that kind of thing where it really rises a lot and you can get totally annihilated by buying options if you're buying super high implied volatility. In fact, sometimes you can buy a call before earnings, watch the stock rise, and still lose money because what you made on delta, that directional move, you lose all that and then some on vega. And then, of course, from the flip side, being an option seller, it's great selling those really expensive options, but you can lose so much on gamma or delta that whatever it is you make on vega, it can more than offset that and you can end up with losers. So, man, playing earnings, you've got to play it really, really tight. And I really don't have a penchant for either being a buyer or a seller. When I play earnings, I've been a buyer going into them and I've been a seller going into them. And what I look at is that implied volatility. A lot of times I'll do what John was referencing and find the 1 day standard deviation. You know, if I'm making a trade the day before earnings, find the 1 day standard deviation and take a look at how big the magnitude of that move is, and then look at the magnitude back on a stock chart in past earnings, how big was a typical gap. And if that 1 day standard deviation is bigger than a typical gap in the past, I might think about being an option seller. And if that 1 day standard deviation is smaller than a typical gap on earnings is in the past, I might think about being an option buyer. There you go. That's everything there is to know about trading earnings.
There you go. You can shut off the rest of the episode now, listener, because you've heard it all. Now, thank you for that. A very egalitarian approach to trading earnings. A little bit of buying, a little bit of selling. And tell you the truth, I joke about trading from the dark side, but I tend to lean the same way. I'm not a devotee of one way or the other. I really tend to look at what makes the most sense for that particular development. And the one thing I would just stress what Dan said is, I've talked a lot and I've done a lot of talks about the top 5, top 10 mistakes of options traders. Those presentations are always very popular. I always get asked to bring those out and do them at different areas. And we talked about some of those on the show here today. But one of the most common ones I always hit on quite a bit because it's very relevant for this particular audience, the beginning options trader, is to really look at those implied vol levels that you're buying going into earnings. There's this perception that buying premium, buying vol is a safer way to trade. It's perhaps easier to make money, whatever, than the very risky short premium side of the fence. But the truth is, if you're coming into, let's say, an Apple where the implied vols are just ridiculously expensive, and you don't do that little bit of homework that we've outlined already that John and Dan and I have all discussed about looking at the at-the-money straddle, do the basic math of how much of a move that is actually implying. And I counsel everyone, if they're coming in, the proverbial example is buying the 5% out-of-the-money call, 10% out-of-the-money call, going into an earnings event, specking that the name is going to rally quite a bit, and not really doing the basic math. You're seeing, wow, I'm paying a 280% vol on this name, and I really need the stock to move 18 points just to break even. You'd be amazed how many people fail to do that very basic analysis, that very simple break-even analysis. And if once you do that, it kind of gives you that wake-up moment to say, wow, I really need a substantial move in the underlying for this trade to make sense. And that is failing to do that analysis is what leads to exactly what Dan described and is still, to this day, the number one question that we receive at theoptionsinsider.com. I bought a call, an upside call, going into earnings, the stock rallied, and I lost money on that call. How is that possible? Is the number one question we receive, some variation on that. And it's because of exactly this. You failed to do your initial homework to see exactly how much of a move you need to offset what actual volatility level you're paying. You were completely unaware of your actual volatility levels that you were buying. And as a result, your trade did not perform. So don't go into long premium, long vol thinking it's some sort of cakewalk. It's some easy way to make money. Quite frequently, that could be a more difficult road to hoe if you're not very savvy around it. So at the end of the day, of course, you have to do your homework on both sides of the fence. But don't forget to walk in and do even that very simple Greeks analysis, that break-even analysis when you're going into an earnings type trade. Now, talking about earnings trades in general and strategies that perform well around earnings, all of us, Dan, John, myself, tend to prefer the risk-mitigated, risk-defined types of trades that are typically spreads. We've had some episodes in the past where we've defined different types of spreads and walked you through them, spreads with wings, different types of spreads like that. I encourage you, if you missed those episodes, go back and listen to those earlier episodes of Options Bootcamp where we walk you through those subjects. But of course, there are a lot of different ways to approach earnings using spreads, and we're going to hit on some of those now, including some of our favorites, the calendars, the straddles, the strangles, and the butterflies. And John, I can hear you champing at the bit out there in the wings. You're dying to get in on this conversation about the spread. So I'm going to toss it over to you and let you walk some of our listeners through some of your preferred methodologies for implementing spreads around earnings.
Yeah, this is a great question because for a lot of the retail customers, these strangles and straddles, and even buying, an out-of-the-money call or put, the premium is so high that they come to me and say, what can I do? And what I say again is do your research. And perfect example is today, I wrote about something where Amazon was implying about 8.5% move. So, but the straddle, again, was a lot of premium. So I say, you know what, don't do the straddle. That's too much premium. Let's buy a Condor. So the Condor was the 265, 70, 75, 80 Condor. And the sweet spot for that trade is between 270 and 275, which it is right now. Doesn't mean it will be there by Friday, but that trade costs about 60 cents. And if the underlying closes between 270 and 275, that trade's worth $5. So you don't have much of an outlay. And again, you're using your research and your third-party research, and you're finding what maybe the sweet spot might be, and you're doing that. If you look at the past four big earnings this past week, Apple, Amazon, Google, and Netflix, in two of the examples, in Amazon and Google, they both moved right about what the straddle was implying. Now, of course, Apple and Netflix moved more, so you would have lost all your premium. But I think if you put some Condors or some butterflies on, I think you would have been a net winner. It's a cheap way to make a speculative bet. And because what happens is that you're 100% right, Mark. Number one question we get is Apple is 515. I bought the 450 puts for a dollar. Stock's 451, and now they're a dollar. What happened? Or vice versa on the upside. So that's a way I say, look at the perceived move. These market makers on the floor, very, very savvy guys. They are putting their own money at risk, and a lot of times, and they have things priced pretty well. Again, you're going to have some outlier events, but a lot of times they'll see these underlying move right in line. So try looking at maybe butterflies or maybe condors, and that wouldn't be a way we can play earnings and not from the long side and not get, you know, killed if nothing happens.
And as we're talking, I'm just pulling up our archive so I can give our listeners the exact show numbers. And of course, episode 13 was spreads part one, and episode 14 was the advanced spreads where we get into flies, iron flies, my favorite. I know we kind of came down on the iron side of the fence for both the condor and the fly. We both like iron flies and iron condors. But listen to both of those episodes again to really get a better handle on spreads. We also hit on them earlier back in June on episode 6 and 5 as well. So we've done four episodes now doing an overview of spreads and how you might like to use them. So take what we discussed in those episodes and then apply the earnings methodology that we've discussed here today in terms of exactly how the Greeks perform, the bizarre nature of the decay that you encounter, the fact that implied vol is going to probably generally increase and perhaps some staggered patterns going into the event, and plan your strategy accordingly. If you're more comfortable, if you're just in general like to lean more towards a long vol, long premium side of the fence, then you have those spreads, those types of trades. Either way, we encourage you to use spreads, not just for the short types of trades. We encourage you to come out, if you're just buying at the money straddles, then you really haven't listened to many of our shows. Actually, let me just say that, because that is indeed a very difficult way to make money in the long term, because you're just getting double the decay and double everything else, and it's really difficult to make that type of trade work. So we definitely encourage all of our listeners, regardless of which side of the fence you're trading earnings, light side, dark side, to use those type of premium mitigated, risk mitigated types of trades like spreads. To simple verticals, ratios, risk reversals, condors, iron condors, butterflies, you name it, all the different types of spreads we've talked about on these shows. And a lot of people love the iron condor these days. It's probably the single most popular spread we see repeated on the Options Insiders because it is such a very defined risk-reward type trade. People can put that on and see exactly how they're going to look pre- and post-earnings and pre- and post-expiration and get a good handle on their risk that way. So if you like those types of trades, and I'm sure many of our listeners are fans of the Iron Condor, then that's certainly one way you can approach it. But again, another overview we wanted to give you of earnings. We haven't discussed that scenario specifically here on the show, and I know it's a very popular, very timely one for a lot of our listeners. A lot of you like to make.
Mark.
Oh, sure, go ahead. You have something else to add?
Can I just mention one thing about the Greeks? It may seem like I'm contradicting them, but the one thing I do want to bring up, if you're trading weekly options, and let's say on Thursday or Wednesday or Thursday, really in the earnings, sometimes be careful looking at the pure implied volatility number, because you may get a number like 200 volatility. Wow, look at that. But again, it's a premium over parity, and on this for the straddle for sure, and any deep in the money call. But even the out of money calls, if Apple's 515 and the 570s are trading at a dollar, the delta, which is right, the calculation may say, well, this is a 10 delta or 5 delta. It's really not. You know, you're 100 you're 100% right about, make sure you know where the stock has to go for you to make money. Don't look at the delta all the time. Look at where it must go. So,
yeah, you know, John, you totally make a great point. And yeah, you're totally doing our listeners a service bringing that up. It's not contradictory, I don't think. And it's something that needs to register on your radar. You know, just looking at the theta and looking at the implied volatility and looking at this stuff is not enough. You know, you've got to really understand how these functions. I mean, you know, you want to be a big boy trader and have a fighting chance of making some money, you got to really know how these things work. And when there's only a few days until expiration, implied volatility goes kind of out the window. You know, I mean, what I was talking about before was for a typical option, you know, maybe a month until expiration or something like that. Yeah, if you're not looking at the implied volatility, you're going to get yourself in trouble. But when there's a couple days until expiration, they're weeklies or something like that, then, hey, you know what? You've got to look at some other things instead, like John's pointing out. And, you know, it's important. It's not enough just to have a pretty rough idea how this stuff works. You know, you got to learn it, you got to know it, and then you can use this really, really powerful tool and, you know, and have a fighting chance of being a successful trader.
And just to quickly reiterate what John's talking about there, that premium over parity concept, you remember from our earlier episodes, we talked about intrinsic value, extrinsic value. He's talking exactly about that. Let's say the XYZ is trading at 50. The XYZ 45 call now has $5 of intrinsic value. That's its parity value, essentially, because it is $5 in the money. If that XYZ 45 call is now trading for $7.50, it's got $2.50 of premium trading over the parity value. So therefore, you got essentially a 50% premium to what the parity value of that option actually is. So looking at that, and perhaps, you know, disregarding other things like implied volatility if they're too confusing to you, if you can just look at that number and get a handle on exactly what that means to you from a break-even concept and exactly how much you're paying over what that option is really truly worth at the end of the day, that'll give you a good handle on exactly what vol levels you're trading and how much you're actually paying for these, or in this case, or perhaps even selling for these different types of scenarios. And again, if you want to learn more about that kind of stuff, by all means, go back to our earlier episodes, episodes 1 through 4. We walk through all those different types of concepts. So now, speaking of walking through concepts, we're going to close out the options drill segment for this episode, and we're going to dive right into our mail call segment.
Mail call. Time to look at questions submitted by our listeners.
All right, and welcome to our mail call segment. This is, of course, the portion of the show where you, the listener, get to sound off on the Options Bootcamp program. First up, we have a question coming in from the Stock Doctor. I like that name. He says, why can't I trade options after hours? I'm missing most of the stock movement if I wait until the next open. And Stock Doctor, I feel your pain. I hear what you're talking about. And this is indeed a frequent complaint we receive at Options Insider. I'm sure Dan and John, you guys received this complaint/question quite a bit as well. It has to do with just the nature of the markets right now. The underlying is only open for a certain period of time, after which the underlying that most of these options you're trading are derived from, equities, indices, etc., are closed. Their markets become very sporadic, very wide, and very thin. And so most of the major market-making firms and the exchanges have decided not to list contracts during those periods because the underlying is simply too thin for them to really hedge and actively make a tight market. So they thought rather than provide a reduced quality experience, they just provide nothing. Of course, that's coming back to bite them a little bit now because more people are really getting involved in these markets and trying to do things like trading long premium, which is a more risk-neutral, or not risk-neutral, but a more risk-mitigated type of approach than just blasting out premium all day. And of course, once they start doing that, they discover that it is a difficult road to make money and a difficult way to make money down that road because so much of the move, just look at most of the recent Apple announcements, for example, so much of the move occurs in the after hours when you really don't have a chance to access it as an options trader. Now, sometimes the move continues into the next morning and you're fortunate and you get to sell your options, your long options, at a decent premium level and a decent level for the underlying movement, and you actually make your money and it works out all right. But time and again, we see a big dramatic move in the underlying, and quite frequently some or perhaps even all of that move retraces by the time the underlying opens the next morning. So you, as the long premium holder now, have really missed your opportunity to sell that option and collect the profits you wanted to make on that trade. So as a result, we've seen a movement starting to grow in the option space. People saying, hey, we need to do something about this because it really is limiting the options, pun intended, for people who are trading long vol, long premium to get out of some of these positions for a profit. So some people are talking, people over at the Boston Options Exchange and a few other exchanges have started banding about the idea of perhaps an after-hours limit order book, perhaps limited only to names that are having earnings at night, perhaps limited only to certain strikes around the at-the-money. Different proposals have been put forth. Some way to really offer some sort of liquidity, maybe it's just for closing open interest transactions, some way to facilitate that. So if you're holding on to an options position, particularly a long option position, you're not really left holding the bag from an earnings perspective. And of course, there's been some pushback against this. It's a controversial idea. Other exchanges, other firms are saying, wait a minute, that won't be a good environment for traders. The market will be very wide. There won't be any liquidity providers. So they're resisting it, but I tend to fall down on the camp that I think some outlet for closing out liquidity, closing out open interest is better than none right now because too many people are just being left holding the bag, and as a result, they're suffering and their positions are not performing as they hoped. Dan or John, I don't think we've had a chance to really discuss this much on the show. I'm curious to hear what your opinions are. I know this is a very contentious issue. Maybe, John, we'll start with you as representative of a broker. What do you think about offering some sort of maybe limited after-hours functionality to the customers out there?
I think I'm more mixed on it than you are, Mark. I mean, the reason why – you mentioned this very clearly, but the reason why the – you know, option market makers buy and sell options and they hedge these positions and they use the underlying to offset the delta. So the tighter the underlying market, the tighter the option spreads are. Look at Spider's Q. After hours, even in some of the bigger names, the liquidity in the underlying is very thin. So I think I'm mixed on, although you brought up a great point, which I hadn't heard before, that maybe on a limited basis, closing only. But still, I'm not sure if the feels that the customers would get would be that great. And I think we might get a lot of complaints. Hey, I sold this option, you know, for $2, and it really should be $5. So, again, even if it's closing only, someone has to buy that, the option or whatever they're going to do, and then rehedge it in the marketplace. And if they can't rehedge it in the underlying, the market may be really wide. So you may be opening a Pandora's box here. But, I mean, I'm definitely open for it and see what happens.
Dan, where do you fall on this contentious issue?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of somewhere in the middle. I really don't necessarily feel a need to have the market open later. I mean, I feel like if you're really that ingrained in this kind of thing and you have a strong opinion, you can kind of work your way, you know, you're probably trading big enough where you can kind of work your way around it anyway. I mean, I've seen when earnings comes out, the stock shoots up, and then by the time it opens, it drifts back to unchanged, and there's the move you miss. But that's the delta move. You know, the implied volatility move, or the Vega move, that pretty much, you know, I don't think you're really missing out on that anyway. You know, I mean, basically, the volatility gets crushed immediately as soon as earnings is announced, and it stays crushed, you know. So that's the volatility move is usually, I think, pretty one directional, and you don't miss it. All you miss is the delta move, and you can take care of that by trading the stock after hours, just hedging the delta. So I don't know. I mean, it's not that big of a deal. I remember talking about that when I was a market maker, and I remember thinking, holy crap, so now I've got to trade during the day and then go home and trade. Oh, geez, you know. So the argument that there won't be good liquidity is an interesting one. I mean, a lot of retail traders don't really appreciate what market makers do for them in terms of liquidity. Liquidity is really super important. But the fact of the matter is, it's one of those you build it, they will come sort of things, I think. I mean, if there is something to trade, people will come and trade it. You know, market makers will make markets after hours, and they'll probably be tighter than a lot of people think.
Yeah, you know, I've kind of been beating this drum a little bit on our network over the past year as well, that maybe we need to take at least some experimental steps in this direction, because what we have right now clearly isn't serving all the needs of the audience. Of course, we had a year last year where volume was down. We're looking for ways to increase that volume. Perhaps if we were to offer some sort of limited functionality, it might be better than nothing. But I can certainly hear the complaints of people like John and their hesitation that it wouldn't be an optimal scenario and it might cause more problems than it solves. That's certainly a legitimate criticism. It's just what we have right now certainly is not ideal. Because I hear what you're saying, Dan, with the implied vol tends to be one directional. It does come in quite a bit. So that move, of course, if you're long premium, that hurts you anyway. So then if you're long premium, you really, all you have is that delta. And you're right. If you're savvy enough, you can hedge in the underlying. That requires a fair bit of savvy, though. That requires a fair bit of capital in your account to actually delta hedge or hedge your gamma with the underlying. I'd say a lot of the listeners of this show probably won't have that level of either account balance or sophistication to actively take advantage of that. So all they really have is the underlying swing. So in that case, maybe being able to work an order, they buy a call spread or a call an Apple X price, they can work an order to close it out at their desired level in the after hours. If it gets filled, c'est la vie. If not, they had their chance. And so maybe that's better than nothing. I don't know. But it's definitely something that needs further study. And I think perhaps a limited pilot in that scenario could at least prove or disprove everyone's long-held assumptions on this one. All right. Next up, we have a question from Mr. Timothy Stevens coming out of the options hotbed known as Tulsa, Oklahoma. A lot of options action down there. He says, if I buy a 3-month at-the-money calendar spread prior to earnings, am I correct in saying that I'm net long Vega and short Gamma? And you are correct. And just to walk our listeners through what he's talking about here, buying a spread typically means you're buying the farther dated contract, selling the shorter dated contract. So in that scenario, looking at an at-the-money spread, you're trading both at-the-money contracts. He's buying the farther 3-month out contract that is a much larger Vega position and shorting the nearer term contract, which is a much higher Gamma position. So he is indeed net long Vega and short Gamma. So he is correct. He goes on to say, if so, what type of earnings announcement would benefit me the most? An as-expected announcement where the stock stays at the money strike for my short Gamma, or a wildly unexpected announcement where the stock moves dramatically for my long Vega? Which risk metric is king in the time spread equation, Gamma or Vega? Thank you very much for your insight and for producing this informative program. Well, you're welcome, Mr. Timothy Stevens. And Dan, this is the age-old question. The time immemorial battle between Vega and Gamma. And this is something that anyone who's really going to get into time spreads on an active basis really needs to settle this battle in their head and understand how these two risk metrics, these two Greeks, really play out, because they really come into contrast when you're trading time spread. So Dan, why don't you walk our listeners through your take on the Greeks as they apply to time spreads, and in this scenario that Mr. Stevens lays out, where you feel the rubber meets the road.
Clearly, given the two choices, what's more important in long time spreads in earning situations, Gamma is definitely more important than Vega once the rubber hits the road and the announcement comes out. That's because Vega, even though time spreads have positive Vega, you can't really look at it as a positive Vega position. You have to look at it as a positive Vega position and a short Vega position. You have to look at the two options on legs. And if there's a big move, probably lower, we'll pick the best case scenario for the position favorably affecting Vega. If there's a big move lower and implied volatility rises a lot, probably you're going to see the short options volatility and the long options volatility converge. So you're probably still going to lose some implied volatility you're going to make some implied volatility on the short option, and you might make some implied volatility on the long option. But bottom line, what you end up making net on Vega is going to be so much less probably than what you stand to lose on Gamma. I mean, as far as Gamma, like when the rubber really hits the road, if there's a really big move, you can lose 100% of what you paid for the spread. And you are not going to make 100% on a Vega move. It's just really somewhat unlikely.
Somewhat unlikely. I like that. Really, really somewhat unlikely.
I'd make a good politician.
You would. My 48% guarantee. But, you know, you're right, Dan. That is Gamma, really, at the end of the day, particularly for the audience we're talking about here who are not trading delta neutral, who are not hedging and don't have access to professional level accounts, really the Gamma becomes king in that equation very quickly. Because you see the movement, and of course, remember, Gamma is your rate of change in your delta, so that delta is going to get exponentially larger very quickly, whereas your Vega will increase, but as Dan outlined, certainly not enough to offset the dramatic swings you're going to see in that near-term Gamma. So if you have a dramatic movement in the underlying, that Gamma can come back to bite you in many ways. And remember, Gamma works in both directions. If stock rallies, the Gamma is still going to kick in there as well, the short Gamma, whereas the long Vega may not come to help you in that scenario. It may be actually, you see people's vol typically come off on a rally unless it's a very dramatically unexpected rally. Then, of course, vol will pop for a short term. So, interesting question. Good to see that you're playing with the time spread equation there, Timothy. And because it's certainly a great spread once you get understand the nuances of it. And I tend to always say that time spreads are really where the boys become men from an options trading perspective. Because a lot of people can handle verticals. They can stay in the same expiration month and understand how that works pretty well. But once they start mixing up expiration months, then it gets a little more confusing for people. How does one month equate to the other? Which month is king in this different scenario? What happens if vol comes off? What happens if the underlying moves? All these different things and how the Greeks react to those different movements. So if you can wrap your head around that and really understand that, then you've really come a long way as an options trader. And then you really have, hopefully, been listening to this program and we've helped you become or help you move from that raw options recruit to that seasoned options time spread veteran. Last up here, we're going to have a question from Rich T, a short but sweet one. He wants to know, does Sogo offer reduced commissions to close out short options trading for a nickel or less? This is, of course, what we talked about on the show in the past about incentivizing customers to close out positions that are just essentially winding down to zero and are really just risk on the books for no reason. So, John, take it away, sir. What does Sogo do in these scenarios?
That's a great question. As a general principle, our commissions structure or rates are so low ready that we do not reduce commissions, again, as a general policy. But on a case-by-case basis, we will consider reducing the charges on very low-price closing transactions. Remember, all the brokerage, but us with such low rates, we have exchange fees that have been going higher, the OPRA fees, which have been going higher, and we're getting squeezed from the exchanges and from OPRA. So our margins are very slim with the low rates. But again, if a customer calls me or emails me or emails the option department here, you know, we can look at the case, and on a case by case, we can make an accommodation, for a customer. But as a general policy, we don't have it programmed into our system.
I certainly hope that listeners of this show, at least, have learned enough not to nickel and dime themselves literally into a substantial amount of risk. It always drives me crazy when I see customers have positions on their books that have gone their way. They've sold the option for a dollar or 80 cents or what have you. It decays all the way down to a nickel or sometimes even less. And they won't close it out because of the commissions. Sometimes they have a philosophical opposition to paying more for commissions than the trade is worth, whatever it may be. And they leave that risk on their books for no reason instead of locking in a winner. And of course, as we talked about many times, that could come back to bite you in many scenarios, a surprise announcement, whatever the case may be. And that winner could suddenly turn into a massive loser. So if you are in this scenario and you do have trades that are south of a nickel, short trades that you want to, you just close them out. There really is no viable reason to keep them on. I think a good rule of thumb is you ask yourself, you have this position on for a few cents. Would you come out right now in the market and sell it for 3 cents? Or 2 cents? The answer is usually probably no. So if you ask yourself that question and the answer is no, then take it off. Pay the commissions. Just take it off. There's no reason to have it. Take your gains. The old saying, pigs get fed, hogs get slaughtered.
Certainly. Mark, can I just mention one more thing about that?
Sure.
You know, 50 cents is really half a penny. So, you know, again, for an option that's a penny, it's a lot. But if it's 4 or 5 cents, it's a half a penny. Some brokerages charge, you know, dollar and a quarter or more. That's more of a case for, wow, I'm going to buy something back for a dollar and the commission is going to be a dollar and a quarter. But again, with our commissions, it's only half a penny. So they're already very low. But again, if you call in, especially if you say that you listen to the podcast, then I'll take special care of the customer.
There you go. Mention you're an Options Bootcamp listener and you'll get the special treatment. Call up Sogo, ask for John, and he'll take care of you. I like that, John. All right. Thank you to everyone who wrote into the mailbag this week. A lot of great questions. If we didn't have a chance to get to your question, then by all means, we'll get to you on another episode. We love hearing from you, the listener. If you'd like to join us here in the mail call segment, then by all means, you can do so at theoptionsinsider.com. We have our comment system. You can send an email there. You can post a comment on the site. If we like it, we might be able to pull it into the show. Of course, you can shoot us an email, questions@theoptionsinsider.com. Just put in the subject line the name of the show you're asking your question about. Or, of course, you can find us on Twitter or on Facebook. A lot of ways to reach out to us and join us here on the Options Bootcamp program. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for this show. But before we go, as always, I like to check in with my cohorts, my partners in crime, my fellow bootcamp drill instructors to see what they have going on that may interest you, the listener. Starting off with you, John. What is coming up in the land of SogoTrade.com?
Well, we just rolled out a new website, and this has easier navigation, more content, more features. The new blog is going to be rolled out next week or two. You can always follow me on SogoTrade Option on Twitter and SogoTrader on Twitter. And we're looking forward to increasing our margin capabilities in the next maybe month or so, and working on a mobile device and mobile apps again in the pipeline coming soon.
I'm looking at the site as we speak, and it certainly has a much cleaner look, a much cleaner UI to play around with. So if you haven't visited it, SogoTrade.com, you can check it out there for yourself. Listeners, if you are indeed a SogoTrade customer, then you can log in and stream the show directly from the site while you're trading, while you're looking at your accounts, and maybe give you some ideas, walk you through some scenarios you may want to consider while you're looking at your SogoTrade account and planning your options trade accordingly. Of course, if you're not a SogoTrade customer, get on over there, kick the tires, and see what we've been talking about here. And then, of course, you can stream the show and do all that other fun stuff and read all of John's articles over there at the website, SogoTrade.com. And last but certainly not least, Mr. Passarelli, what is coming up in the land of MarketTaker.com?
Well, we are officially taking one-on-one students again at this time. We have to time, kind of lock the doors and not let any in because there's two of us who do the one-on-one coaching, me and John. And when our schedules are filled up, we cannot take any more one-on-one students. But we've had some graduate through the program, and we're really excited to be able to take on some new people. So if interested, you know where to find me, of course, markettaker.com. Come visit me and send me an email, dan@markettaker.com, and maybe we can accommodate you.
And, of course, Dan promises if you let him know you came to him through Options Bootcamp, he promises to wear both his hat and his whistle at your first mentoring session. So that might be a plus or a minus to you. I don't know. Depends on your personal preference there.
And Mark will pay for half your class.
Yes, of course. That goes without saying. All right.
It's not necessarily true, guys.
All right. And that's going to do it for all of us here on the Options Bootcamp Drill Instructor Squad. But before we go, we want to thank all of you out there in the listening audience for downloading and streaming and subscribing to this program and making it such a success. And we'll see you next time right here on Options Bootcamp.
Options Bootcamp is brought to you by SogoTrade, an extraordinary value in online trading. Why pay more for the same trade when SogoTrade can deliver for less? Options commissions are just $5 per ticket and 50 cents per contract, and just $3 for stock and ETF trades. Open a new account today and receive 100 free trades. Visit www.sogotrade.com to learn more about all our free trading tools, educational resources, and other resources available to you to enhance your trading experience. Remember, options involve risk and are not suitable for all investors. For more information, please read the characteristics and risks of standardized options available at www.sogotrade.com. Options Bootcamp is produced by the Options Insider, Inc. All rights reserved.
The preceding program was a presentation of the Options Insider Radio Network. For more programs, visit www.theoptionsinsider.com/radio or search for Options Insider Radio in iTunes.